Twofootedtackle.com.
Twofootedtackle.com's podcast comes back to fight another day, accompanied by one man and his dog and a cup of hot Bovril. Yes, we are going deep into the bowels of non-league this week with a special pod celebrating all that's good and great in the semi-pro game, while fending off big money bids for our star performers from Crawley Town. This is what football is all about. This is the Two-Footed Tackle non-league special. So, hello and welcome to the Two-Footed Tackle podcast. I am Gary Andrews. I'm back from my holiday. Yes, there was no podcast last week because not only was I many, many, many miles away from the studio, Chris Nee couldn't even fly solo, could you, Chris?
No, I had no voice thanks to a small bout of flu.
Oh, Chris. Yeah, how's your voice now?
It's returned rather quicker than the last time I was ill, if I remember. We struggled through a few weeks where I could barely talk.
You sounded like Johnny Cash. It's like we had the man in black in the studio.
It could be worse.
Yeah, it could be. Have you got internet yet? Which has been the main problem.
No, so. I still don't have the internet.
Chris, you've got to sort that out.
Anyway, I haven't watched football for ages.
Apart from live stuff, which is not necessarily a bad thing. That's where it's meant to be. That's where the action is. Now, this is, of course, the Two-Footed Tackle non-league podcast, so we thought we'd bestow some royalty on this occasion. Please welcome the First Lady of non-league, host of BBC London's Monday night non-league show, Caroline Barker. Caroline, welcome to the pod.
There is normally a fanfare at this point, which I think you've not afforded in your budget, so if you could arrange that for next time, that would be great. Thank you for inviting me along. It's a prestigious week of non-league football, what with non-league day coming up this weekend, and right, royalty, I don't know about me, but the world of non-league football will be blessed this weekend, and you should all go and watch it and other such things.
Hear, hear. And why are we going non-league? Why are we talking, was you, Caroline mentioned, non-league day? Now, the man behind that, the brains, if you will, is James Doe, and he also joins us. He's on the line. Hello, James, how are you doing?
Hi there, I'm doing pretty well, yeah, thanks.
Fantastic. So, did you ever think it would actually sort of get national coverage when you started out your little idea? Did you ever think it's going to be picked up all over the country?
Well, no, of course not. I mean, it was just a bit of fun, really. I just sort of threw it out there on Facebook and Twitter, and you know, see what would happen. And it has got a bit out of control almost.
And well, long may that out of control continue, because you really seem to have tapped into something. Just tell us, for anybody who hasn't heard the story, how did this idea begin? Where did it all start, this idea for non-league day?
Okay, originally it started off sort of about a month ago when I went on QPR's pre-season tour of Devon, and the first match I went to was at Tavistock. And it was a beautiful little ground. All the fans were made really welcome. And, you know, it was a really top night. And my dad, who hadn't been to a match for years, sort of came along too. And he remarked that, you know, what a great night he'd had. And I just sort of thought, you know, it was obvious how financially important the match was to the club. And I went to another couple of games later on in the summer at Hayes and also at Hampton and Richmond. And again, the crowds were really big, everyone was really valuing the fact that QPR were there. And in my, you know, when I'm not supporting QPR, I follow the Harrow Borough when I get the chance. And the last time I went to see them, there was an appeal, you know, to raise funds to buy new bulbs for the floodlights, which, as someone who'd been to see the club, you know, in the past, I'd never heard of anything like this before. And I thought, you know, obviously times must be tough. So, you know, how can I come up with something to sort of help them? And then I just noticed in the calendar, big sort of break, not only for the internationals, you know, the Premier League and Championship games having the week off, but the England game actually moving to a Friday night as well. So I thought, you know, this is a pretty unique opportunity.
And, yeah, loads of places have pounced on it. What kind of response did you get when you sort of started talking? Did none of the clubs come to you, or did you start sort of approaching a few of them? What kind of happened after you sort of punted the idea out there?
OK, well, first of all, yeah, I invited just a few friends on Facebook, and I knew some of them like non-league football, and they, you know, sort of invited their friends. But sort of to start off with, club-wise, I actually went out and wrote to the clubs via email to try and get them interested. And it was quite a slow process at first, because probably a lot of people, I was a spammer or just some sort of loony, I guess. But eventually, you know, I picked up Caroline's attention on the non-league show, and she picked that up, which gave me a lot more credibility. and I met Mike Braney on that show, and he's, you know, come on board and, you know, thrown his know-how behind the whole thing and helped build a website, which has, you know, really, really given the campaign a massive boost. So, yeah, sort of gone from there, really.
Caroline, non-league day on there. A lot of people might have a chance to try it for the first time or might actually consider going along for the first time. What is it that makes non-league just so brilliant, that gets under your skin like it did with James at Tavistock and Harrow? What is it that you really just love about the game?
It's funny that James should mention Harrow. We've given quite a few appeals over the different years for Harrow and what they do down there. And it's that fact that you can go along to a football club and you can actually feel part of it. It's quite common knowledge that I'm a Chelmsford City fan, and I originally just went along as a fan, and then I ended up getting on the board somehow. I don't know how that quite happened. I think that's what happens. You don't quite know how you get hooked and how you're involved in it, but it's the fact that you're standing next to the chairman on the terraces and that you're being asked to put money in a bucket for something or another. There is always something to put money in the bucket for, and the fact, yeah, you know, it is a cliche, but that you can change ends, that you can go and meet the players in the bar, and that you can feel part of that family and a unique experience. You know that although the wonders of modern technology, we are likely to see goals and the like on the internet now from non-league games, but you know that you are part of something, or you're witnessing something. Were you there that night that we lost 7-6 to Farnborough? I was. It wasn't pretty. Were you there at the Bashley game? Were you there when the rains were coming down and you were standing in what resembled a bus shelter? And there are only a few of you that can remember that experience and feel part of that and feel so uniquely close to a football game that you can't get anywhere else.
And Chris, you're a great lover as non-league as well. You've given up your Villa season ticket, as listeners may know, and you're spending the season at Tooting and Mitcham United. How did that club get under your skin?
Well, they were briefly my local team. You used to live in Tooting as well, so we went along for a couple of games. First game was actually against Harrow, and it was quite cold.
It was bitter. I remember that night well. I was so cold. I hadn't got extra pair of socks on or anything, the basics that you need. I came back and I think I was just shivering for the entire night.
Yeah,
but I loved it.
It was great. And I think I sort of picked up a few games that season, and then last season I went to a few more games. Just because the more that the Premier League gets obscene, the more I'm starting to recognise the importance of what these clubs actually mean in their communities. So I made a pact with myself to go down, and I can't stop going. It's totally addictive. You do feel like you matter. Every time you put 10 quid, which is a bit much, through the turnstile, you feel like it's doing something.
Is that how much they're charging now?
Yeah.
See, it's 10 quid to get in the Blue Square South. But this is one of the other great things about non-league day. Clubs, we were talking off-air about how competitive clubs have come, but there are loads of different initiatives, and James has been, I know, promoting these on the website and on Twitter and on Facebook, how clubs are trying to get involved in non-league day and bring those prices down, because a tenner is a lot of money, I still think, for a non-league team. But I tell you, trying to persuade a chairman to make it kids for a quid, or to make it, you know, if you bring your season ticket along, is a difficult thing. And I've had troubles all week trying to persuade our chairman to do that at Chelmsford. And he's not convinced. He's not convinced it will work. But I keep telling him it will. Have the faith.
Well, James, how many, just give us a flavour. So, have some clubs lowered their prices for Premier League season ticket holders?
Well, very much so. I mean, Canby Island immediately springs to mind. They've lowered it to zero. So it's free for any season ticket holders of other teams, and Cambridge City have just been in touch to say exactly the same thing. I've also heard, I think it's Glossop North End, they haven't cut prices, but all the proceeds are going to a local multiple sclerosis charity. So that's a pretty amazing gesture on their part.
That's fantastic. Glossop is a place I've always wanted to go, just because of their reputation of their pies.
A club that has got a really disproportionate level of coverage on this show. We mention them almost every week.
We do. I think it's probably because of the pies. I keep meaning to actually get them to send a pie down at some point, because I would love to try one. We put out on Twitter, where are you going? We had a few people respond. Jamie Cutteridge is going to Worcester City versus Nuneaton Town, as they now are. Not Nuneaton Borough, as I keep wanting to call them. Chris Lines, narrowed the angle, says he's probably going to Colliers Wood. Digital Maverick says somewhere in Hearts, possibly St Albans. Chris Applegate, I think, is going along to Bethnal Green United. Brilliant variety on there. Are you hoping you might be able to get this a kind of annual thing, or when you've got another break on there with Premier League games, are you hoping that you might be able to turn it into a regular event, James?
Well, personally, yes. I think my initial thing was it sounds, it's sort of more marketable if it's an annual thing, because it's a big thing that everyone can sort of build up to and be more prepared for. But at the same time, I've already had lots of people contact me to say exactly the same sort of set of, the same scenario. It's going to happen, you know, just about 4 weeks later in October, on the 9th of October. So there's quite a bit of pressure for us to get the website all up to date with all the fixtures again within a pretty short space of time. But I'm conscious of the fact that if we do it too often, you know, people might sort of get a bit tired of the idea. So I'm pretty, we've got to be a bit careful about it, I think, how we take it on.
And where are you going to this Saturday then?
Hayes and Reading have asked me to go down. They are probably, of the teams playing on Saturday, my closest, because a lot of teams are away, including Harrowborough, my favourite choice. And also, one reason I've also chosen to go there is the fact that a lot of my friends who live around here, who wouldn't normally go to a game, have been persuaded to come, and they would not have gone to the other side of town to watch Harrow. So I thought, for the good of the day, that Hayes would be the better option.
Caroline, I don't think I really need to ask where you're going on Saturday, do I?
I know, Chelmsford City all the way. The great thing is that FA VARs action as well on Saturday, so if people haven't been to a non-league game before, I mean, it's all well and good going to any of the Blue Square games, but to get lower down in the leagues as well, or in the pyramid, and to go to an FA VARs, your first, perhaps possibly your first FA VARs game. And we always speak to, it always seems to be Whitley Bay that make the final, and they've won it for the past two seasons, but we always end up speaking to their manager, and the passion from him just makes you want to go to a game alone. Any Whitley Bay game I want to go to after speaking to him, but any of those games I think are well worth going to. Hayes and Yedding are a great team to go and see anyway, because they always seem to do very well on very little resource, and I think they could do with as many fans as they can get. I'll probably get slated for saying that, but they don't do well in the fans' stakes, so that's the great thing about non-league day. As James was saying, attracting people that wouldn't normally go along, and him taking his mates along, making sure you take one or you take two, three, if they've never been to a non-league game before, making sure they come with you.
Actually, my first ever non-league game was watching Tiverton Town in the FA VARs, because they're actually my local club, properly my local club down there. So very happy memories of that. Chris, you're not going to Tooting. Where are you going this Saturday?
Well, should we reveal where I'm going later on? As we were talking about it, and moan about the fact that I have in my wallet an expired season ticket, and my team is playing at Canvey Island, so I could almost have gone for free.
You could have done, but okay, we'll leave it till a bit later on to reveal where you're going to. Suffice to say, it is not a Blue Square club. It's not. They're not Premier. They're not North. They're not South. I'm going to make a shameful confession at this part. I'm not going to a game on Saturday. This is for a very good reason. It's my birthday this weekend, and for a long time, I don't normally do much in the way of planning. And so a good few months ago, I said, right, that's it. I'm actually going to plan, agree to get a load of people together, and we're going to just head to the park and have a game of cricket if the weather's nice.
That's ideal, because there's no football on Saturday.
Exactly. And that was the thing. I looked and went, I'm not going to be distracted by football. This is fantastic. It's a one weekend. And then this came up, and I thought, I can't just tell everybody, friends who I regularly neglect to go off to watch, well, Bethnal Green United a couple of weekends ago, saying, sorry, I can't come out on during the day, I'm off to watch an FA Cup tie.
Feeble.
I know.
Especially as most of the non-league grounds you go to are next to a park or next to an area where you could at least set up your wicket and bowl a few and watch the game at the same time.
I'm ashamed. Actually, I could round them up all together and go to Colliers Wood. I think
you're
the nearest one.
There you go.
On there. I'm hoping that none of them are going to be listening and they'll just cry off this weekend. But James, congratulations on the, and it's so great to see non-league day out there. Thank you so much for talking to us as well, and let's hope it's a success. And hopefully we'll have another one as well.
Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, James. Much appreciated. That's James Doe there, non-league day. Thanks to James Doe there, the brains behind non-league day. Well, if you are heading to your first ever non-league game, you'll need to know the big talking points in the grassroots. Caroline, I guess, first off, if you're looking for drama and talking points, look no further than Crawley Town. Not just for the fact that their last game against Forest Green ended with nine men aside on the pitch.
I don't like to drop names into conversation. Everyone's favourite manager, Steve Evans, who has become a byword for something else. When you say Steve Evans on non-league forums, I'll leave it at that. He is a character to behold. As you say, the last game, two sent off for either side in that one, and it ended 1-0 against Forest Green, Crawley running out with a win. But the players that they have brought in, it has been obscene. And we've had ructions all round, a mini slanging match between AFC Wimbledon and Crawley over their pursuit of Danny Kedwell, which AFC Wimbledon didn't let them have in the end. And the latest signing, Mr. Brody, coming for allegedly £275,000. I saw an interview with him today. He touted that figure around again. I was told that that was turned down last week, that figure of 275, and that it was slightly increased. But 275, you know, it's a massive amount for League One clubs, let alone for conference sides. And I did text Steve Evans straight after it, because the rumours he was after a goalkeeper, and I said, is David James coming in? But he just replied saying they couldn't sort the personals out with David James. So he's a character, and there's something about him that is likeable when you do meet him in person. But what he's doing this season, if he doesn't win promotion with that amount of money, surely there'll be questions asked about his managerial skills. But then, of course, we all know it takes a while to gel, whatever players you bring in. But it'll be interesting. It's an interesting experiment in whether you can buy your way out of the league.
We had actually somebody text, because you always put out for questions, that said, Richard Brody is vastly overrated. Discuss. That was Tom Ayres on Twitter. I don't think he is. I think he's a very good player. I don't know about your views on that, Carola.
Well, he's played at Wembley and he did all right. Richard Brody, the one thing, he's a typical striker in so much as he wants to score a goal. He doesn't really want to pass. So how he's going to get on with their other striking resources, they've got about 52 on the bench now, we'll soon see. He likes to be that front man and leading the line himself. And he's one you've got to manage. He said it all happened 3 minutes before the transfer deadline, and he didn't want to leave York anyway. So if he's saying he didn't want to leave York and he turns up at Crawley, he says he's looking forward to the challenge, which they all said. At least he hasn't turned around and said he's a lifelong Crawley fan yet. But I don't think he's worth £275,000, but I'd like to be proved wrong. It'd be interesting to see if he can live up to his price tag.
Chris, I know we mentioned Crawley in the very first podcast of the season when we had Chris Lyons in, and we sort of were fairly amazed then. You're still shocked at what's going on down there,
yeah,
aren't you?
Well, Brody was one of the very first ones mentioned, wasn't he? And he's really chased his man and eventually got him seemingly almost against the player's will. But the sum of money is something that York probably can't turn down. It's an amazing thing to watch, because it's just, there's so many layers of weirdness going on there. There's the directors and their backers and everything going on, and then you've got Steve Evans in there as well. So it's a really fascinating thing to see, and it'll be interesting actually to see how Brody gets along with Matt Tubbs as well, because they're both goal scoring poachers a little bit, and it'll be interesting to see how they get on with two of those up front.
He certainly was a good buy, Matt Tubbs. I think he proved with Salisbury that he's a decent striker and he can do well at that level and beyond. But you're right, how the both of them gel when they don't want to pass to one another, who knows?
The fee that was paid for Tubbs made your eyes pop out earlier in the summer as well, so the Brody fee is just staggering.
That's... You have to, again, until you see it written down, you don't quite know if these fees are correct, but both players and certainly one of the sides is saying it's around 275,000, but you're right, the amount they paid for Torres as well, sadly not that one, that would have been a story. You know, the money is, as I said, obscene. But for Crawley fans, you know, they must just be thinking at the moment, great, look what's going to happen.
I guess for other fans, like Chris especially, they're the team that you want to beat now. It's not Luton, it's not any of those other Matt Tubbs, big clubs. It's Crawley. They're the team that are going to put themselves on there. And you're going to get, you know, your smaller teams, Histon, Altrincham, going to be going out there just going, you know what, these are overpaid. Get in there.
Well, it's going to be the added complication of playing a cup final every week that's going to face the likes of Man City as well. And it's going to be difficult for them because it's a very competitive top sort of six or seven in that league. It's difficult to see who's going to get out of it. And they're certainly not going to walk it.
Interesting, though, that AFC Wimbledon, Wimbledon said right at the start of the season, Terry Brown said, oh, you know, we're just going to fly under the radar, but I think we'll do all right. And they're up there, and I wouldn't bet against them. And Mansfield as well, such expectation on David Holdsworth's shoulders, the Mansfield manager. And again, you know, they're sitting top of the league, albeit they've had perhaps easier games than Wimbledon and the likes below them. But Crawley, I couldn't see past Luton at the start of the season. I thought they'd do well again, seeing as it was under such pressure last season, Richard Money. That pressure spilled over in the past couple of weeks as well. He's had confrontations with the fans. But Mansfield, Wimbledon, Crawley, Luton, those big, big names at the top of that league. And that's forgetting Grimsby and Darlington, who aren't, you know, they're in the top half yet, but they're not challenging at the moment. We're only just entering the season. But yeah, big, big names in that league.
It's probably one of the strongest conferences I can remember for a good few years. So, as you mentioned, so many big names. And there's going to be a lot of very disappointed fans come the end of the season for some of the clubs who feel that they should be back up in the league or getting to the league for the first time.
Oh, and it was the same last year again. Luton, that big letdown, they thought they were going back up at the first attempt and see Oxford go up. Again, another huge team. And this will happen next season. There will be two more big teams that will come down again into the conference prem. So you're just going to get this constantly, this constant battle at the top and the league separating, much like they say the Premier League has done now, separating between the big boys at the top and the others that will keep going and try and stay in there.
I guess it's certainly harder for your likes of Gateshead and Bath and Histon, obviously, who've got probably one of the smallest budgets in the division there as well.
Well, again, if you believe the budgets that you're told by some of the managers, some of their players are on £125 a week and, you know, paying their own bus fare to get there. Histon, a lot's been put on David Livermore's shoulders. It's his first managerial job for him to go in there as well. He says they were unlucky in the first couple of games that he's been in charge. A lot will depend on whether he can get that spirit going at Histon, because they certainly haven't got the money. Altrincham, I mean, Alty have been saved a couple of times by what's known as the AGM Cup, where at the end of the season one club or another goes bust and they stay up by virtue of that. They're going to have a difficult season. But Bath are a big historic team and you'd like to see them do well. And Hazen Yedding, who James was saying is off to see this weekend, again, they seem to go and rely a lot on their manager doing well and getting the best out of their players.
Mm. And then we, you know, you drop down the levels. It's no less fascinating at Blue Square North, Blue Square South. On their Blue Square South, Chris, you saw Bromley a few weeks ago in the pre-season. they're a good side, and not real shock that they're up the top, given what you saw.
No, they looked okay. They knocked the ball around quite nicely, and they very quickly spotted a couple of weaknesses in the Tooting side and were very quick to expose those. And if they've got that kind of incision and the awareness of where the gaps are going to be, at that level it can be absolutely invaluable. If you've got a manager good enough and what am I saying?
Not going
I'm going to strike that. If you've got a team good enough to pick up on where the gaps are going to be and they can go and attack them, then they'll probably do okay. It's
they
a great
hard.
Start to the season.
They are hard nuts, though.
They were big.
They always turn my team over. Big, strong lads, and you don't want to go there on a wet and cold Tuesday night. It's not ideal.
I know a couple of Bromley supporters, actually, who've said, we're going to fade away because we do this every season. We leap up the table and then just end up mid-table. So they're certainly not confident that they're going to get promotion. There's some big names in there as well, even at that level, because obviously Dover have got quite a bit of history in there as well. There's a certain club called Chelmsford City, who we might touch on a bit later in the podcast. And then you've got the likes of Ebbsfleet as well. I mean, brilliant for the last weekend there. Derby against Dartford, one of the highest attendances for quite some time in non-league.
2,700 and something, and the something were all important. Ebbsfleet, again, Liam Daish has just quietly gone about his business. The MyFC experiment, we spoke about it on the non-league football show on Monday night. He has just carried on, even though they got relegated, he's just quietly going about it. But I don't see them going up immediately this season, unfortunately for them. Dover, big, big problems over the summer, but they brought in the right man in Martin Hayes, who was formerly at Bishop Stortford, and they've got a manager there again who can do things with players perhaps that aren't on the biggest budget, so they'll do well. Big support behind them. Braintree, I have to say it because they're rivals of Chelmsford, a big surprise for me being up there, but again, well-organised team, not necessarily the biggest flair players, but well-organised, and that's kind of what wins you that league. Newport did it by being well organised and being consistent, and if Bromley can carry on as they've done, obviously they've won every one of their matches so far, then they'll do well. But they slip up at odd places, Bromley. That's where it tends to go wrong for them, places you wouldn't expect them to lose.
Absolutely. And the North as well. Affrington Town are probably one of the shortest odds at this time of the season. I think I remember hearing Alan Alger say on Monday night.
He says a lot. They've done well, but see, I tipped Telford before the season started because I think in Andy Sinton, they've got a good manager there again. He's got good connections, can bring in players, knows the area, can bring in players from the Football League as well. So I think they'll be there. And pretty much that has kicked off how I thought it would look, the table with Alfreton on top and then Telford working to a good side as well. But again, some good traditional non-league sides there who've got a good fan base. And I'm glad to see Worcester are doing okay, because Worcester in the Blue Square North didn't know whether that experiment, that swap across, would work for them. But they're doing okay at the moment. But it's a lot of miles for them to travel this season.
I saw Workington play Wimbledon in the FA Trophy last season. I was very, very impressed with them. I thought they were a very good side. And I've kind of been half looking out for results, because I was just very curious to see how they get on. So, yeah, if they playing anything like they were last season on that game, very impressed. I was also be interested to see how Drawlston do, because I got chatting to Dave Pace when Exeter played them a while ago. Interesting character. He's a character, isn't he?
He can certainly talk. And again, they're a team that aren't perhaps the best supported in that league, but well organised, well drilled by Dave Pace, and he knows the league. He knows non-league football, and he knows how to get the best out of those players. And the ones he needs to bring in at the right times during the season as well, just after Christmas when you've got quite a few injuries and the pitches are heavier and you need to be pushing on. He knows how to work the system and get the right players in. Good scouting network there as well.
Of course, probably the big story that's happened in the last few days, which obviously we can't talk about too much for fairly obvious reasons, but Croydon Athletic, Chris, obviously, we've had Terry DeFellin, who's been in here several times, regular guest, has said, I think, on this pod, I wonder how Croydon getting their money, getting their players in to do that, because they're a very small club with small crowds on there. We may have got the answer.
Yeah, he dropped a few hints, didn't he, Terry, about the promotion and his feigned surprise at how they achieved it. I'm hoping that they can put a team out next Monday, because I'm hoping they'll be at Tooting. I'm quite looking forward to that match, so I hope they show up.
It's desperately sad for the fans, though, isn't it, when you've got a situation like that, you've seen your team win promotion, then you suddenly have this link to Pakistan match fixing, which isn't a particularly regular thing at non-league, it has to be said, but it's always I always feel desperately sad for the fans when they've had to go through that, especially after the good times.
Anything like that, even if it's not anything quite so sinister, any financial worries that aren't the fans' fault is terrible at any level of football. When you've got a non-league where there's a legitimate chance of clubs just disappearing off the face of the earth, where are these supporters going to go? It's desperately sad every time it happens.
And when on the interview that you did with Tim O'Shea, you just saying, I don't know whether we're going to be playing next week. That was just such a sad moment for me, listening to that interview.
Well, Tim O'Shea's the Croydon Athletic manager, and he was brought in on the premise that he was coming to a club that had a decent budget, and he maintains that he had a decent budget, but it was a budget that's comparable to most of the teams in that Ryman League. And he thinks that he's done well, and he doesn't want the players to feel like they've won the title, and now any alleged incidents that have happened around the club or surround the club at the moment will affect anything that they've done. And you're right, it's that not knowing. And we had this several times last season with clubs that were about to go under. Grays, didn't know what was going to happen to them. King's Lynn, a couple of seasons back, when we didn't know what was going to happen to them. Chester. And you have these managers that are just sat there almost a bit like administrators, waiting to see what's going to come in so they can give it to players and how can they carry on. And it's that not knowing, as you say, that affects them. And yeah, he's a manager and he doesn't want this on his CV. Tim, unfortunately, was at Grays as well before him. So he's been at two clubs where there perhaps have been outside factors where what's gone on the pitch hasn't perhaps reflected on what he wants to do.
Of course, seeing as we're talking Ryman, we've got to talk about Tooting very briefly. But Chris is shaking his head. Let's talk about Sutton instead, because we saw them play on Monday and yeah, they looked a very good side and they're topping the table with probably good cause.
Yeah, no surprise. I spoke to Tooting manager Mark Beard just before the start of the season. We spoke about who the favourites were going to be, and he identified Sutton. At that point, I'd seen them play two of their friendlies, and they looked ominous in those two friendlies as well. They looked excellent, and they were fantastic on Monday. So, no surprise at all to see them up there. They're thought to have one of the bigger budgets in the division, but it's been spent very, very wisely, and they look dangerous.
Mm. Might all change for them, though, because Paul Doswell, who's the Sutton manager, had been down taking tips from Alan Pardew, and of course Alan Pardew hasn't got a job at the moment, so I don't know where he can go and watch a bit of training to see whether he can pick any tips up. But
Aston Villa, if things are to be...
No.
But that's he's a good manager as well, and he talks the talk too. He's one of those non-league managers that you can sit down and have a proper football chat with.
Okay, well, I hope you're all feeling non-lead up at home. We'll give you a breather. The second part will take our customary look stateside with MLS. Plus, we'll get our England donkey ears at the ready as we discuss the international news ahead of the Euro 2012 qualifiers. That's coming up after a short musical interlude. So, welcome back to the Two Footed Tackle podcast. We're taking a quick break from non-league for Chris to tell us the latest goings on stateside. Chris, looks like the Galaxy are slightly melting at the top of the table.
Yeah, two defeats on the spin. The latest one against the Wizards. Apparently, Jimmy Nielsen had a great game in goal for the Wizards on the night. I didn't actually see that game. So they may yet face a challenge for the Supporters' Shield from most likely Columbus or Real Salt Lake.
Columbus didn't play last week. Real Salt Lake hold at Toronto, though. Good result for Toronto there.
Yeah, Toronto have been quite funny this season because they're up there in the East, but it's a very poor conference and they're going to probably struggle to get into the playoffs unless they really pick up their form. But they've been picking up some sort of oddly decent results. And that certainly qualifies as one of them. And if they can start putting a few wins together, then they might just make it in.
Of course, all that's allowed the Red Bulls to gain up a bit of ground. Because I know last time we were in the studio talking about how the Western Conference was probably going to run away with it all. And, you know, just be the wild cards that they possibly might be getting in on. Now Red Bulls, well, they're 3 points off RSL.
I think the Red Bulls are now assert for the playoffs at that level. I think they'll struggle to go any further than that and get in Supporters' Shield, but they'll be in the playoffs, and with the players of the quality that they have now, they're as good a bet as anybody to succeed in the knockouts. I think actually the Western Conference is going to completely dominate the playoffs, so you might find that you may have five or six teams from the West again.
It'd be quite interesting if you did have an Eastern Conference winner this year, though, given that the relative strengths of the two.
Yeah, I mean, the two divisions are completely just poles apart in terms of their quality, and the strongest teams by miles are in the West, and even the sort of mid-table Western teams like Dallas and Seattle are really starting to pick up this season and leaving the East in their shadow.
And where does that leave DC United at the bottom of the East?
DC United, it doesn't matter where they are, they're 5 points behind the next worst team, which is the brand new club in Philadelphia, and they were knocked out of the Open Cup last night as well, so it's season over already.
Wonderful. I mean, what needs to be done at DC? Because I know you've been very critical of your club there for quite a while, but it's been one disaster after another.
It has. There's massive issues there, and some of them are money-based. They're in a stadium that isn't sustainable. They're losing money hand over fist because of running the stadium of that size and of that age just isn't worthwhile for them with the crowds that they get, which were, until this season, were fairly decent for MLS. They need to get a stadium sorted. A lot of people say that the management needs to be sorted out, and that's from the very top all the way down to the coaches. Obviously, we don't have a permanent head coach at the moment. Ben Olsen has indicated that he doesn't want it next season, and I don't blame him. So it'd be interesting to see who they bring in. But then we're in the same situation this time last year with Tom Soane leaving, and Kurt Arnolfo came in, and I was reasonably optimistic that he would prove everybody wrong, but unfortunately he didn't.
And just to make things even more cheerful, do you know who DC have got this weekend?
I actually don't.
It's Columbus.
It's Columbus again. It's the crew. Always losing to Columbus.
Well, they are top of the Eastern Conference, so.
Columbus are a very robust, not always that exciting to watch team, but you can always rely on them to get a result. They've been solid for years there.
Tell you, one team is getting results. We were talking at the start of the season about how poor Seattle had, given how strong they finished last season. And they're slowly creeping up the table. They're 5 points behind Dallas in the Western Conference, and roughly where you'd have to say Real Salt Lake were last season.
Yeah, probably Real Salt Lake snuck in a little bit. But if you look at this Seattle's win record, it is very similar at this stage to what Real Salt Lake's was. Seattle, rather than scraping in, though, will probably be fairly comfortable when it comes to the end of the season getting a playoff place.
And probably game of the weekend, Real Salt Lake against the Red Bulls.
Yeah, very exciting. And Real Salt Lake don't quite have the names that the Red Bulls have, but they're a really exciting team to watch. A lot of quality about them, some excellent players, particularly going forward. And the Red Bulls obviously have their three designated players and designs on superstardom.
They don't have Robbie Finley, though.
They don't have Robbie Finley, who we've criticised and praised in equal measure this season.
Absolutely. Anyway, we'll keep with the international flavour of part two. Take a quick look at the internationals this week. After all, the break is what has made non-league day possible. England first. They've got a Berbatov-less Bulgaria on Friday. Switzerland on Tuesday. Caroline, no Terry or Lampard. Distinctly familiar look, though, you've got to say, to Capello's squad.
I'm going to rain on your parade. I wanted to talk about the MLS, but, you know, whether non-league players could get into there is the debate that always reigns every season about whether non-league and where it would sit within the MLS. I'll leave that to one side. Would non-league players make the England setup? Well, they've got no one else at the moment, have they? Terry, Lampard, Gerrard. The debate ahead of this game has been about the players that aren't going to be there, of course, rather than the quality that I would hope would be there. Did you see the cheesy photo shoot this week of the New England shirts with all the young players? The only real recognisable faces, you would have to say, from recent squads that Capello has picked, being Rooney and Walcott, of course, who missed out on the World Cup. And you've got to go into this one thinking, he qualified so well for the World Cup. He did it with flair and an element of surprise because we weren't expecting it. Can he do it again for the Euro 2012? And I just don't know. There's a real atmosphere and a real lethargy around football that has been created by England's dismal performance at the World Cup. And that has gone on through. We've seen really poor gates in the non-league world as a result of that. And people are pointing towards England and how badly they did. So they've got to really perform on Friday night. And I'd like to see Gerrard's going to play, hopefully, with a bit more freedom. He hasn't got Lampard there. It's convenient. And I'd like to see England push on. And, you know, we need a 3 or 4-0. That's what we need heading into the important qualifiers to get off the mark on the first one and other such footballing cliches to start well on Friday.
Chris, I know you said that you wouldn't have Lampard anywhere near the squad. Well, he's not near the squad on this one. Caroline's mentioned it. We'll free up Gerrard. Do you think this could be a point where you have some of the younger players going, look, it's now our time to displace Frank Lampard from the squad?
Well, I hope so. On the Gerrard point, I was at the Hungary friendly, and when Lampard went off, Gerrard was a completely different player. Mm. As was demonstrated by the two frankly wonderful goals that he scored on the night. And the whole team just looked a bit more balanced. And I like Frank Lampard a lot as a footballer. I think he's a fantastic club player. But at his age now, we're talking, you know, he's probably got one, maybe two tournaments at a push in him. He doesn't really help the team out. He hasn't fulfilled his potential at all for England. And I really do think it's time to look to the future. In terms of the young players, that position isn't that well endowed in this squad, is it? I think we're talking about James Milner and Gareth Barry and Michael Carrick. I'm not sure any of those in central midfield are quite up to the job.
Is Lampard one of those players, though, that's there and you will miss him when he's not there? Gerrard, yes, played with more freedom, but is he one of those players? I was sat behind two guys on the bus the other day and they were saying, yes, I do take public transport. The guys on the bus were saying, oh, Lampard, you know, he's as good a player as Rooney. And I thought, I didn't tap him on the shoulder and say, you fool, but I felt like doing it.
I think for me, Lampard, he's a good player because of the way that the system's set up around him at Chelsea, and he's got some fantastic players around him, which all play to his strengths. You don't get that in England. You've got players who are very similar, like Gerrard, who can't give him that kind of creativity and that urge to burst forward. For me, I mean, I think Gerrard's actually a slightly more versatile player, which is why he thrives a little bit better.
I think taking him out has much bigger effect on Chelsea than it does on England.
Hugely on there. And what do you think of all the Capello bashing that's going on? Because if one minute he's the hero, then very poor South Africa. He's still the coach. I don't have a problem with him there, but then that's not my country. Chris is very much supportive of him. I mean, where do you stand on the whole Fabio Capello and the donkey ears on the sun and all that?
It was interesting in his press conference running up to the game on Friday night where he was talking about the fact, talking about all these players, how much he was looking forward to seeing them play and playing with flair and going forward. And the minute someone stopped and said, so Fabio, what about all the negative comments that have been, you know, aired about you and after the World Cup in the run-up to this game? And suddenly he needed the translator. He hadn't needed the translator up until that point. And I just, it's those sorts of things that I think rankle with the media in particular. You didn't need it before. We ask a question that was pretty simple in the way that it was put to you and you didn't quite understand it. I would have had him out straight after the World Cup. You can go on with your little Capello loving in the corner. But I would have had him out for the pure reason that it's a real opportunity to start again. Is he going to be there after the Is he going to be there at Euro 2012? Who knows? He's not going to be there after Euro 2012. Let's start again. Let's start afresh. If we're going to bring new players in, if we're going to blood new players, let's start all over again. but I wouldn't have mocked him in such a way that the Sun did.
I certainly wouldn't have been disappointed to see him go after the World Cup. I as you know, I'm a big fan of the guy. But the chinks are beginning to show in his armour, and I think the fact that his preferred formation is very slowly dying in international football, at least. And yet he will stick with it until the very end. That has started to become a bit of an irritant, and the translation thing is so transparent now. It's very clear that he does it. And the weaknesses are beginning to show. So as much respect as I have for him, and as much as I think that he will get us through this qualifying group at an absolute canter, certainly wouldn't have been disappointed to see him go.
There were interesting comments on the TV watching the Hungary game. I wasn't at Wembley. Saying about how he didn't get up, he didn't go out of his area, and he didn't command the players in the way that you'd expect from a manager who perhaps would go out there with a bit more balls and show what he's made of. Did you get that sense when you were there in the stadium? He just sat back, didn't he? And you didn't want that from him. You wanted him to come out like everyone else had to face the boos.
He was definitely avoiding the boos, wasn't he? Unfortunately, I was one step above Club Wembley, so I didn't really get a feel for anything.
Throwing the popcorn.
Chris is just a corporate whore. That's all
that, I really felt like a corporate whore that night. It was just bizarre.
One thing that was I sort of found quite interesting, this is a slight tangent, but I was discussing today's podcast in the pub with a few colleagues yesterday, and they were talking all about non-league, and they said, so what's the chance of getting a non-league player into the England squad? And I said, well, and then I suddenly thought, in the past you've had the likes of Pearce, you've had the likes of Ian Wright, you've had the likes of Les Ferdinand who've plied their trade in non-league. And now I was really struggling to think, you've got Chris Smalling possibly, but he's still very much unproven at that level. There doesn't seem to be any of those kind of players there. And to me, I almost feel that those players had more hunger because of where they came from. You don't necessarily get that now.
I can't see DJ Campbell making the England squad anytime soon, can you? Of course, players have done it the other way. Jimmy Greaves ended up at Chelmsford City post-England career, so we had him on the way down. There is a certain level of hunger in non-league, but there's also not. If you look at some games that I've gone to watch in the Blue Square Bet Premier, as we now have to call it, ka-ching, you go and watch some of those games and you still get the same players that perhaps don't want to pull on the shirt and are a little bit lazy and don't have that commitment. I don't think necessarily it makes you a better player, makes you want to fight more coming from non-league. It obviously makes you realise where you've come from and how much or how little perhaps you were paid, but I don't know whether Chris Smalling will change as a result of starting out his career in non-league football. Makes you a bit tougher. It's certainly tougher than going and playing Manchester United reserves every week, and that's why they go and blood a lot of players in the higher levels of non-league football. I don't know when we'll see, is the long way of saying it. I don't know if we will see another player turn out for England who's had that close connection with non-league football. You're right, though. Smalling's probably the next best thing, but have we really seen enough from him yet?
Right, exactly.
I'm not convinced.
No, not at all. And Jermaine Beckford's probably the other one, and I don't think he's a Premier League striker.
Gabriel Bonlahor absolutely took him apart when he was playing for Fulham last season, and he's no great shakes, is our Gabby, I'm afraid.
Then look at Steve Morrison and how well he's doing. Of course, not for England.
I was going to mention Steve Morrison, actually, leading the line for Wales.
They top out at League One-ish, don't they? You do get a few
players, or
Welsh footballers in general. You get the few managers in the league who do have this faith in the non-league and bring some players through, particularly we've seen at Peterborough, and they do seem to sort of top out at around the sort of top end of League One.
I tell you what, there's so much money being, I'd say, creatively wasted in non-league football at the moment, buying players with certain teams. We probably all know who they are, but we've seen recent transfers, £275,000 for a striker. That's League One prices, isn't it? That's not blooming conference level prices. So there's a good depth of talent in non-league football, but the young players, I don't see them coming.
On a slightly different note, Chris, we could have 12 Englishmen on the pitch when Switzerland take on England. Scott Sutter plays for Young Boys Bern. We mentioned him on the last pod on there. We're both quite impressed. Given England's lack of right-back options, are you quite slightly surprised that Capello didn't go slightly left-field on there?
I don't think anybody will ever be surprised at Capello not going left-field.
Should he have gone left-field?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly, and it's Sutter's a player who's voiced his desire to play for England over Switzerland in the past. Has obviously completed something of a U-turn here. I think he played for the 21s for Switzerland as well, didn't he? But fair play to him. He's got his chance to play against England, and I think I would have taken it as well.
Mm. He's got enough Spurs supporting players in that squad already, Capello, isn't he? He doesn't need another one. He's refreshing, though, because he's the sort of player that sat at his press conference and said, I can't wait to play at White Hart Lane. This is what football's about. And you're right, he's the sort of player you need in there, the Stuart Pearce of the world.
I'd love to see a few more players, actually, the likes that do follow Sutter and sort of go to foreign countries. You know, say, I mean, just picking an example at random, Scott Sinclair, who's now at Swansea, you know, maybe going to a Dutch league and playing for 20 or somewhere like that, getting an experience in European football.
How old was Sutter when he went? 16?
16, yes, yeah.
It does help. A big move.
It does help that his father's Swiss, obviously, hence why he's in the Swiss team. But, so, you know, I'd have liked to have seen Matt Derbyshire given a chance when he was banging them for Olympiacos.
He should be in there now, really, because there's a little bit of youth sort of running through the squad. There are some players like Johnson, who's in there, Walcott obviously is in there, and a couple of defenders are looking like they're going to get their chance as well. But up front, it's looking like the same old few, isn't it? So why not somebody who's, I think, a relatively well-proven finisher, which is something that we really lack.
And on the European point, if you put injuries aside, Owen Hargreaves, of course, who was the standout player for us at the last tournament but one, and he is the sort of player that goes and learns his trade, and you can only benefit from being in a different league, playing at a different tempo and seeing the styles of play that you're going to come up against in international tournaments.
Absolutely. I think we'll leave it there for internationals. A couple of sort of interesting other games as well. Chris, for me, the most interesting one, Norway against Portugal, simply because Queiroz has got a six-month ban on there. And Portugal will be without Ronaldo as well. And Norway, decent side as well. And given that Portugal really struggled last time around, they're one of the big names I can see possibly having serious issues this time around.
They could. They obviously scraped into the World Cup and were fairly average there, picked up one or two sort of reasonable performances, and then got knocked out by a much better side. They're going to be really interesting, I think. They've got a lot to prove, and that might be enough to force them onwards, but I can't see it.
And same with France as well. They've got Bosnia, who actually came very close to the World Cup as well. I'm sure James Appel, one of our regular guests, would probably be able to tell us a bit more about Bosnian football. But, I mean, Blanc's got a hell of a job there to try and reconstruct a team that couldn't be more chaotic than if it tried.
He has. He's made some big moves in trying to dish out some punishments along with the French Football Federation. He looks like a very talented manager, Laurent Blanc, so I think he might do a decent job, and I can't see them struggling to qualify out of that group.
You've got to love a bit of discipline as well, haven't you? Too right. I would have given them all 16-year bans or whatever he's gone for. You know, that whole French situation was brilliant for the World Cup, but if you are French, you must have been hanging your head just thinking, what is going on? And thank goodness it's over. Thank goodness there's a new beginning.
And Blanc did fantastically well at Bordeaux. I mean, I was just shocked that they kept Domenech on for so long. Everybody could see this car crash waiting to happen. And then it wasn't just a car crash, it was a full M25 pile-up and then some. Okay, we'll leave it there for part two. We'll be back among the grassroots, though, because that's really what we're here for. Terracing Ahoy will change ends at the interval for more non-league chat, and that's coming up after this. Yes, part three of the Two Footed Tackle podcast with Gary Andrews, Chris Nee, and Caroline Barker. And it's time to go deeper into non-league. We're not just talking about those fancy underpitch sprinklers that are all the rage at football grounds these days. This weekend, as we have been mentioning throughout the pod, it is non-league day, where fans of Premier League teams are being urged to explore football at a lower level by popping along to a non-league game, supporting their local club, etc., etc. What difference does a few extra on the gate make to a club? Well, let's ask one non-league club. Glenn Moulton from Ryman South Godalming Town joins us. Hi, Glenn. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you on the Two Footed Tackle podcast. Now, bank holiday, you can get an extra two in the gate guaranteed this weekend for sure. I don't know if you know, Chris in the studio will be popping along for the very first time with his other half to watch Godalming play.
Excellent. I'll be happy to have a pint with him at half time.
Good news.
There you go. Chris, what attracted you to Godalming? Why are you popping along?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, my club, Tooting, is playing away at Canvey at the weekend, so I thought I'd get into the true spirit of non-league day and go as local as I could. And I'm in Hazelmere, so it's a mere stone's throw away.
Fantastic. Glenn, how much of a difference will it make, even if you get, say, about 50 extra fans through the gate? How much of a difference would that make to a club like Godalming on match day?
Well, 50 extra people would be absolutely awesome. That would make a huge boost to our match day proceeds. But it's more about getting people to return to the club. If out of that 50, 10 of them came back again a couple of times in the season, that's what it's all about. It's retaining local supporters.
What can people expect when they pop along to watch your club at the weekend?
It's a much more of an authentic football experience. You're going to have real local, passionate local supporters. You're going to be right close to the players. You'll be able to hear the manager's tactics and all the rest of it. You're not just a number when you come to Ryman South football. You're closer to the action. You're part of the day. It's just much more enjoyable, in my opinion, experience. I don't feel like I'm being ripped off when I'm watching Ryman League football.
Well, I guess if they come along, they might well see a win as well, because you've had a fantastic start to the season.
Yep, well, we've won our opening two league games, and we won our FA Cup replay on Tuesday night, 3-0 against Ramsgate. That gave us a cheque for £1,500, which doesn't seem a lot in the grand scheme of things, but that's a huge boost to our club. And we have a pop at another £3,000 in the next round.
We had James Doe, who's the founder of Non-League Day, on here earlier, and he was talking about how, you know, just £70 for changing the floodlights and stuff like that. Every penny really does count at non-league level, doesn't it?
That's true. At Godalming, we count every penny. We even recycle aluminium cans and have car boot sales every Sunday. It's counting every penny, really. We're just trying to attract more local people to our games. If they come to a couple of games a season, great. Every penny counts.
Absolutely. Chris, you'll obviously be spending your hard-earned cash there. We've talked about what you love about non-league. I guess for you as well, it's a new ground, which is something that people don't quite get to experience at Premier League level. They get the same clubs over and over again,
don't
they?
Something that matters to every true football geek is racking up as many stadiums as you possibly can. And I've got one on my doorstep that I haven't been to, so it's only right that I go along.
Mm.
I think the thing about Ryman League as well, and I know at Godalming and also other clubs in the Ryman South, Sittingbourne, it's decent level of football as well, isn't it, Glenn? When you get down to that level, you know, much is made about non-league football being whippets, flat caps and not too much entertaining football, or entertaining for the wrong reasons. But Ryman South is highly competitive, and you do get some sizeable gates in that league.
Yeah, it's a really competitive league. We're playing against clubs from all over the southeast of England. We have got some quite long journeys to make. And the standard of the players, people just don't know it in our local area, but they have a really decent non-league football team on their doorstep. They don't appreciate that the players are coming from, well, not just local players, some of them are coming great distance to play for us. It's just a real struggle to publicise ourselves and get people to come down to us instead of going to, say, Woking, to Aldershot or something. They've got a very competitive football club right on their doorstep.
And another factor about the Ryman is obviously getting out of it, getting into the Ryman Prem, because we've seen a number of teams that have come up from there and then progress well into, if we look at the Blue Square South from AFC Wimbledon going up and straight through, Dartford now up there as well. Big teams with big attendances as well. So what's the key really for Godalming this season? Is it promotion, or is it, as you say, another few thousand the next round of the FA Cup that you go?
Well, we've lost in the playoff final last year, and whilst we were all absolutely gutted to lose in the playoff final, for the club it was probably the right thing to happen, because we don't want to run before we can walk. But this season we're really geared up. We're hoping to be promoted to the Ryman Premier. We realise it's a huge step for us, and we'd be a very small fish in a big pond, but that's something that the whole club is geared up to do next season, and we'll just give it our best shot.
I guess a lot of people don't really realise what the difference is between going up between divisions as well, because in the league, obviously, difference between League 1, League 2, not very much, but what kind of difference does it make when you go from Ryman, the Ryman sort of North and South leagues, up until the Ryman Premier? Because there's a lot of differences up there, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, the size of your grounds already, they're going to be a lot bigger. It's also the ground gradings. We'd have to do quite a lot of work on our ground, which is expensive, to just be promoted. Then the players that we would need to attract, we'd have to pay them more money. The journeys would be longer. It's just the whole part and parcel of it, it's a lot bigger. But we've come a long way in a relatively short amount of time. And as I say, we think we're ready for the next step up.
Are you ready for the weekend, though? You've got Chipstead. How do you think you're going to do against them?
Well, a couple of our scouts went to watch Chipstead on Bank Holiday Monday, and they thought they were quite a good battling side, but we're hoping that we'll have a little bit extra quality to beat them on Saturday and make it 3 wins out of 3.
Ah, that'd be fantastic. One quick question we were wondering about off air before we came on here. You've got one of the Shitty brothers playing for you, haven't you?
Yes, Richard.
Richard, is he actually Danny's brother? Because we were wondering about that.
Yeah.
He is.
Danny's brother, and apparently he used to beat him up when he was little.
Does he know where Danny's going? Because he's without a club at the moment, isn't he? Is he coming to Godalming?
Well, I saw that in the paper this morning and thought our manager will definitely be speaking to Richard tonight at training about that.
Brilliant. Glenn, thank you so much. Really appreciated, and best of luck against Chipstead on Saturday.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks. Glenn Moulton from Godalming Town. Chris, you looking forward to your visit there this weekend?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm really excited. It should be a different experience because I'm sort of attuned to non-league now after coming to it quite late. So it'd be good to get a fresh look.
Absolutely. Okay, right, let's throw out a few questions from our listeners. David Roche on our Facebook page said, the life of a non-league club is becoming harder to maintain due to finances and support. Do the guests in the studio think enough's being done by the footballing and local authorities to support the grassroots system of our game?
They always come back right at the end. When the club's just about to die, then you see the council taking a bit of interest when they realise it's voters, perhaps, that they need to get involved. The FA are trying to do a lot more. They've brought in the National Game Strategy, which is a big old weighty tome that's trying to turn around some of the different areas of non-league football. But what we're seeing that's actually more interesting is the different leagues getting together themselves. So they're trying to sort out financial issues, whether perhaps books should be shown more regularly, whether there should be a wage cap in some sort of shape or form. And that's the leagues actually getting together. So you've got the Ryman League, the Southern League, together with the conference leagues, trying to sort out some kind of area in which they can all agree on, because that's the problem. You've got lots of leagues acting independently, and the FA are trying to get round to it, and they're trying to do a lot more. But we will see that Tony Williams, who's a great name within non-league football, produces a non-league football directory, which a lot of non-league fans go and get. It used to be the only way you could find out where the ground was you were going to. He's been elected onto a committee at the FA, so he's going to be the voice piece and try and transfer some of the problems that you have within non-league football and put those forward. But like anything, it's about breaking it down. Until you get new blood in there and you get people trying to force ideas and different ways through, then it won't change. But technology is helping a lot. Talk about Tooting and what they're doing with different forms of technology. All clubs now, Twitter, they're social media'd up, and that's helping push the name forward and bringing more fans in. And it's ultimately only when you get the fans in you're going to get more money through the gates that's going to help these clubs and make them sustainable.
Chris, I know we've talked again as well about the Premier League paying money to the conference, or conference premier, and then North and South as well. And I don't know if you saw Andy Brassel's article in When Saturday Comes, slightly sceptical about it. But on one hand, you go, well, it doesn't break down to a lot. On the other hand, it really does make a difference to these clubs, that kind of thing. Is it that kind of thing that the Premier League should be doing more, or do you think they're just paying lip service?
I think probably a bit of both. I think it's, obviously it is lip service on the Premier League's part, but I certainly wouldn't want to discourage it. I think the interesting point was how quickly the three leagues below came out and said, hang on a minute, what about us?
It was us, yeah.
Because, you know, it's a fair point, and those are the clubs that are going to be in real trouble. And a little bit of money would help them as well. And the Premier League basically is swimming in it, so why not?
Leads into quite a nice another question there. Jerry Pym has asked, is admission too expensive in non-league? And I know, Chris, you've mentioned £10 for Tooting and Mitcham, which I think's a bit steep as well, but you still pay it, you still go down there.
Yeah, it's, I think coming from the position of being a Premier League season ticket holder, it doesn't quite offend me so much. But a lot of fans are a little bit, there's a bit of disquiet about it. At least we don't charge an extra quid to sit down, though.
Mm. I remember the days, you know, obviously Exeter City, this wasn't when we were non-league, but, you know, charged £6 to get in and stand at Exeter City on there. And then, you know, £10 to me seems a lot, especially when you look at the prices up the league. Some of the other league clubs aren't really charging that much more than that.
Tenner I can kind of expect in the south and north, but a bit lower down, I think that's too much money. What gets me is when you go into the Conference Prem and you get Category A, B and C games. Who wants that in the Premier League of non-league football? It is too much money, and there's a big argument, as I said before, about I've had wrangles over whether we should be charging a quid to let kids in at the weekend for non-league day, whether we should allow Premier League clubs with their season tickets to get in at half price or even free in some cases. And I think you should, because just for that one day, you're going to make it back on the bar. You're going to make it back on the hot food that you sell as well. And it's well worth bringing down those fees to try and get more people through the gates. And that's what's going to put people off. You can still get a decent game of football and a decent half a day out with your family for less than it would probably cost you to buy a Premier League ticket in some instances. But when you've got Wigan doing deals for £15 to watch a game, can you really justify £10 to go and watch Tooting? I'm sure the quality of football at Tooting is right up there, but it does seem a bit too steep.
The pitch is a bit better.
Yeah.
Quick question as well from Jenny Silver, who's The Girl Silver on Twitter. She's a Gloucester City fan, has also sort of recently started up her own network of Gloucester City and non-league reporting for, well, that kind of area. She just asked you, Caroline, if you ever had any problems being a female reporter at non-league level?
I don't think I've ever had any issues with being a woman. I think for me, I was very lucky in that I've always been involved in non-league football through Chelmsford. So I kind of had a little bit of knowledge. And, you know, on the whole, they're most welcome. And the boys are certainly protective of me. So on a Monday night, if anyone was to say something perhaps a little bit out of line, I know I've got, of course, the fine upstanding citizens that are our guests on the non-league show who would always defend me. But no, I don't think that there are those issues. I mean, Jackie Oatley, who's perhaps one of the more famous of the female lot who've tried to go on and do commentating, she's had people that have knocked her perhaps for doing that. But what comes back all the time is her knowledge. And again, she's a raving Wolves fanatic and she knows her football. And I think if you can back up with what you talk, if you can back it up with substance, then you'll do okay.
We'll move on to you, actually, Caroline, slightly. If you listen to regularly to the non-league show, either on BBC London or by downloading the podcast, and frankly, why would you not? You'll know whenever the words Chelmsford City are mentioned, Caroline is swiftly rushed on by whoever's in the studio. We're not quite that mean here on Two Footed Tackle. We always allow time for our guests to talk about the clubs close to their heart. So, Caroline, this is your opportunity to let out all that Chelmsford chat that Dave Anson, Willie Wordsworth and the rest will not let you do on a Monday night. Start off with the Clarets. How are they doing this season?
You're better looking and you're younger, so you get ahead on that. And you let me talk about Chelmsford City. We're doing well. Maximum points from the first three. Then we had a couple of blips. Perhaps shouldn't have lost at Welling. Our goalkeeper did, you can watch it again on YouTube, did what goalkeepers sometimes do, and a little lack of concentration right at the end of the game. We lost 3-2 to Welling. We won our last game against Dartford 2-0, which was important, I think, to get back. Glenn Pennefather, who's a Chelmsford City manager, has made the statement about making Melbourne Park, which is where we play, a fortress, which is sometimes a bit difficult because it's an athletic stadium and you can get out every which way but loose. But he wants to make that because last season we lost so many unnecessary points at home but had a great away record. And it's been frustrating for Chelmsford fans because we've had two seasons of making the playoffs and then just not doing anything else. So this season, there's an expectancy on him. He's had his budget cut. I still think it's competitive for that league, and I still think he's got the quality within his squad to do well this season. I think we will.
And what's Chelmsford like as a club? Obviously, you're very biased in there, but what can people expect if they pop along there?
Chelmsford is one of the original fans-owned clubs. Of course, the Supporters Trust movement, which I back wholeheartedly, has been so important for non-league football. But Chelmsford went to the wall, and we were kicked out of New Ritual Street, which was a famous old non-league ground, and that had at one time held 15,500 when we played Ipswich. We used to get some big crazy games and gates down at New Ritual Street. Kicked out of there, went on a nomadic few years off to Maldon and to Billericay and to play there, and we kept a core fan of about 400 or 500, but those fans put the money back into the club and built the club up again. So we're in the unique position now where we're going to be a community interest club, which means that we're owned by the fans, and we can't have essentially anyone come in and rip those assets out again. So that's the one thing that really strikes you. The people that are there are there because they want to be there. And there was a couple of raised eyebrows when Jeff King and Glenn Pennyfather first came into the club from across at Canvey Island. For those that don't know, Canvey again had a big injection of cash from Jeff King and did very well in the conference, and then he pulled out and he came to Chelmsford. But there's never really been that fear at Chelmsford of a big money, yeah, come and put your money in, but no one can ever take money out of the club, which Jeff didn't do at Canvey. He left them with a great stadium. But that fact that the fans are always there and they will always own that controlling share of the club is so important. And I think you get that sense when you walk in, that welcoming sense of for the fans, by the fans, as we say on a Monday night.
And you've also had that experience at boardroom level, having been elected onto it. And one thing I had my eyes opened, I guess, really, when I read Ian Ridley's book, Floodlit Dreams, about how tight the margins are, that your kind of extra 50-100 on the gate can make the difference between having a budget for promotion or relegation in that kind of league.
So important to get your gate figure right, and also to make your club sustainable. There is no point saying that you're going to get 1,100 through the gate when you're going to get 800 and budgeting at that 1,100. Better to start on your 800 that you know you're guaranteed to get through the gate every week. And then if you get any extra money, you save it for a rainy day. You save it for that extra push at the end of the season. And you're right, those swings in that attendance base can make such a difference. And right back to the start of the programme, when we were talking about, you know, the fact that England and how poorly they'd performed, and those areas can really affect a non-league gate. And that's why non-league day is so important, because those extra few people on the gate will make a huge difference to that club, because it's money they won't have budgeted for. Whatever the club, whatever the level, if you can go along on that day, on Saturday, and make a difference, it really does tell in those end of season forecasts and really help your club push on.
And you have Dorchester on Saturday, bottom of the table club. Is that the kind of one where you look at and think, well, we should win, but oh, this is a banana skin waiting to happen?
The excuses have already come out just in case we do win. Oh, you know, they need to get their reaction somewhere. They'll be coming to us thinking we're unbeaten and we'll want to win. Dorchester, again, a side that I don't want to see drop out of the league. So I want them to pick up points, just not on Saturday.
Absolutely. OK, well, that is just about all we've got time for on here. Hopefully we've encouraged any of you who've been perhaps wavering or not really experienced non-league before to dip their toes in this weekend. Please, please, please do go along. Whether you're in Barrow, Truro, Chester, King's Lynn, London, there's going to be a game on nearby. Drop by, support your local club. You will have a fantastic day. You won't regret it at all. All that remains for me to do is thank our guest, Caroline Barker. Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you for having in and spreading the good gospel that is non-league football. No excuse.
No problem at all. And if people want their regular fix of non-league, if they get hooked on it, they can listen to your show. Give it a plug. That's what you're in here for.
Every Monday night from 9, bbc.co.uk/non-league. And you can find out all about us there and see our ugly mugs as well.
Wonderful stuff. Chris, as I say, thank you to you as well. I'm sure you're going to want to get a very quick mention in for the relaunch, twofootedtackle.com.
It's wonderful. Go and have a look at it.
I concur.
It's shiny.
It's brilliant, and it's my friends Gerard Harvey and Roger Chateauneuf have done some excellent work on it, and I'm really delighted with the end product.
It's brilliant stuff. We've got some new writers for it as part of the new season. Hopefully there'll be loads of brilliant content there. Get involved, have a look, twofootedtackle.com. Even if you just want to leave a comment going, ooh, this is nice, I'd quite like to stroke this site if it was physical. Twitter.com/twofootedtackle, that's Chris's Twitter account. If you want to throw football-related abuse to him at various points in the day, Chris will respond, especially if you're talking about Villa at the moment.
Respond angrily.
Yes, indeed. Facebook.com/twofootedtackle should you want to become a fan of the site and the show. If you want to email us, we have twofootedtackle email addresses now, Chris.
Great.
What's the podcast address?
Podcast@twofootedtackle.com.
Nice and easy to remember. That's about it. Enjoy non-league weekend. We will be talking non-league. We're not going to abandon it there. It will still be there. Take care. We'll be back next week.
Twofootedtackle.com.